May God add a blessing to the reading, the hearing, and the doing of the word. So, we gather here this morning, having survived somehow a week that began with pipe bombs and ended with another mass shooting, this one in a synagogue motivated by racism. So I'm not sure if it's comforting to me, or maybe to you, I'm not sure if it's comforting to hear Jesus name these love commandments as the greatest of all, as the first of all, or if it's just kind of pathetically ironic. Which is the greatest? The scribe asks him. Scribes were the people who kept track of the law. They knew the law, capital L, in and out. So the scribe, who already should know the answer to this question, asks Jesus, which is the greatest? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength, Jesus replies. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Given the events of this week, we might find ourselves falling silent, as the crowds did at the end of this passage. Violent expressions of hatred, like we've witnessed through the news, stand in stark contrast to the command to love so fiercely God and our neighbor. It gets set in even starker contrast when we realize that Jesus was not simply naming the first out of the 10 commandments that we're all used to thinking about when we think about the greatest commandments, right? We know the top 10. Jesus actually had a much longer list that he had to choose from. Faithful Jews in his day followed a list somewhere in the vicinity of 613 commandments. So Jesus is naming these love commandments as the first of a very long list. So it should not be taken lightly that Jesus would just naturally name what Jews call the Shema from Deuteronomy and the command to love your neighbor as yourself, which actually comes from the book of Leviticus. We shouldn't take it lightly that these are the two commandments that he names as first of all. Because he could have named that one about not eating a worm found in a piece of fruit. That is a commandment. He could have named the one about not wearing garments of wool and linen at the same time. Did you know that too is a commandment? He could have named one of the more moralistic ones that folks like to cite today, like the ones about who we can and cannot have sexual relations with. He could have even named a very logical choice of a commandment, such as to always hallow God's name. We say that when we start off the Lord's Prayer. Hallowed be thy name. But Jesus names instead, as first of all the commandments, the one that is bigger and far more important than food or clothing or moralism or any of all the rest put together. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. That's a lot. And the second one is like it because, as one of his apostles would later write, we cannot say that we love God and do not have love for all those images of God that we run into every day when we walk around in this world. That is our neighbors. We cannot love God and not love our neighbors as ourselves. So Jesus pronounces that the first of all the commandments, all 613 of them, is love. Love. Love God, love your neighbor, period. No exceptions. Even the Beatles got this. And for some reason or other, when he says this, this silences the crowd. This passage closes by telling us after that, no one dared to ask him any question. I wonder if it could be that his words pointed a light on their hypocrisy. And like us, they felt maybe some pangs of guilt or some pangs of sadness or grief at their failure and their society's failure to live up to those greatest commandments. But guilt and sadness are immobilizing, right? We can find ourselves kind of stuck there, no matter how valid and valued those feelings are. They can immobilize us. And Jesus's intent was never for us to get stuck in guilt. Jesus is always calling us to be on the way with him. He is always calling us to be on the move with him as faithful disciples. So here are some things for us to think about as we are perhaps kind of stuck with this incongruity of our lives and our society's lives with these greatest commandments. I think perhaps some of these reasons that I'm about to name are perhaps what was so stunning and what can be so life-changing about truly living these love commandments. In Jesus's day, being first did not mean beating out all the others. Any of us who have ever played a sport or been in a band competition, solo and ensemble? Anybody else do that? Right? We know that first means you beat out all the others. You do better than all the rest. In Jesus' day, it was not like winning first prize in soccer, the World Cup, right? It was not like winning first prize in a scholarship competition where you get all the money and everybody else goes home empty-handed. Or coming first in gymnastics at the Olympics where you stand on the highest pedal, get the most precious of medals as your reward, and then, of course, all the best, endorsement contracts, right? We get rewarded for being first. That's not what it meant in Jesus' day for these commandments to be first of all. Being first in Jesus' day was like being the first stone laid. It was like being the cornerstone, the foundation on which all other stones rest. Being first in Jesus' day is like being the cornerstone. The love commandment, then, is not first because it's better than all the rest or more important than all the rest. The love commandment is first because it holds up all the other stones. It sets the direction on which everything else is built. It helps all the other stones, all the other commandments do their jobs and to be the expressions of love that God intended. Commandments like do not stand idly by when a human life is in danger, or do not take revenge or bear a grudge, or commandments like do not refrain from supporting a poor person and giving them what they need. These commandments are only fleeting gestures of pity if they are not held up by, if they do not rest upon that cornerstone commandment to love God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And what's more, we have to remember that love in Jesus' day is not about the warm feelings we get when we think about people or places for which we care deeply. Love's primary component in Jesus' day was not affection like we think about it today. It was not about sentimental feelings for the home in which we grew up, or for our grandmothers, our mothers. Those are all good feelings, but that wasn't love in Jesus' day. As one commentator puts it, the primary component of love in Jesus' day was commitment. Loving God with all one's heart and mind and soul and strength was about stubborn, unwavering commitment. So that someone like Job could sit out there on the dung heap and rail against God and demand an audience with God and still love God with all his heart and mind and soul and strength. In the same way, loving our neighbor, all those images of God sitting near you in the pew today, all those images of God who inhabit this planet, loving them does not mean we have to feel affection for them. To love our neighbors is to imitate God and take their needs seriously. To love our neighbors means to hold stubborn, unwavering commitment to our neighbor's well-being. So the crowd was silenced. No surprise that after this, no one dared to ask him any question, because this crowd already had a cornerstone as the foundation of their lives, and they liked it just the way it was. First in their lives was the belief that authority was enforced by power and control, not by love and compassion. First in their lives was the belief that authority was enforced by power and control, the power of the empire, the control of the temple, the power of fear, the control of popular opinion. This cornerstone that they had comfortably laid as the foundation of their lives was shaken, probably crushed, by the possibility that tax collectors, bleeding women, lepers, and Roman centurions could be equally welcomed in the household of God. Equally welcomed in the household of God. It was shocking and frightening to hear this rabble-rousing rabbi from Nazareth wanting to tear down what they were familiar with and build something new. Today, as we come out of this week that began with pipe bombs and finished with a massacre in a synagogue, we are compelled to examine the cornerstone of our living and our giving. What is first in your life and in mine? Does your living and mine reflect a cornerstone of unwavering love for God and stubborn compassion for your neighbor? Does the work of PUCC do that? Being an open and affirming church is one way we do that. So does opening our doors for students who are refugees and in need of tutoring to make it through school. So does offering a free lunch for anyone at the wide open table and serving lunch at Ministry with Community. So do our youth mission trip, VBS, and even something like having fun at Trunk or Treat. You and I know many other big and small ways that ministries of PUCC are built on a cornerstone of loving God with all our heart and mind and strength and soul, and loving our neighbor as ourselves. Today, and for the sake of the months past and the months ahead, I hope you will join me in building my life and our ministries at this church on a cornerstone of compassion and love. We, the church, this church, now more than ever, we must become so securely joined to the cornerstone of the greatest commandment, that we will then become cornerstones for others, holding them up, welcoming them, so that they too might become cornerstones.